Hello, and welcome to Databook, a podcast presented by Chief Healthcare Executive. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. With Databook, we talk to healthcare leaders about technology, innovation, and the transformation of healthcare. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll get started in just a moment. In this episode, we talked with Dr. C.K. Wang, the Chief Medical Officer of CODA. Dr. Wang talked with us about the ways that data can be used to achieve health equity, particularly for the LGBTQ plus community or the sexual and gender diverse population. He talked about the importance of getting better data to improve outcomes and the need to build trust. Many in the sexual and gender diverse community don't seek healthcare for fear of bias and discrimination. Well, thank you for joining us today. We're talking with C.K. Wang, the Chief Medical Officer with CODA. Dr. Wang, thanks for taking some time to talk with us today.
Hi, Ron. I'm happy to be here.
Okay. Why don't we start by just talking about your background? You've got a very interesting background.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a medical oncologist by training, and I was in full-time oncology practice for approximately 12 years prior to leaving it in around 2017 to join IBM Watson Health, where I helped form a global team of oncology physicians for the company. And after 2 years at Watson Health, I transitioned to CODA due to my desire to work with healthcare data. And that was a little over 4 years ago. And I am, as you stated, currently the Chief Medical Officer at CODA. We are an oncology real-world data and technology company that was founded by doctors and data scientists a little over 10 years ago now, out of their desire to better understand how cancer patients were being cared for in their practices, and that the understanding and of this type of data can help lead to decreasing unwarranted variation in cancer care, thus leading to improved patient outcome and decreased cost of care, the whole discussion around value-based care that was happening at that time. And fast forward to today, CODA's mission is patient-driven and patient-focused. And our mission statement states that we are here to ensure that every cancer patient has a clear path to the right care. And we do this essentially through the abstraction and curation of real-world oncology data so that it can provide meaningful insights to all healthcare stakeholders, including cancer providers, payers, and also life science companies.
Have you always been fascinated with data and with health data and its ability to improve outcomes?
Ron, that is an excellent question. The answer to that question is no. I would say, like many oncologists, I was really in the depth of just patient care, and the data that I was focused on was pertaining to the clinical trial data that was coming out, right, guiding care of my patients. It wasn't until toward the end of my time practice, one of my patients, he was a young, middle-aged, healthy Asian male who was diagnosed with colon cancer at his screening colonoscopy. And he was quite reluctant to receiving post-operative chemotherapy, which was the standard back then, remains the standard today. And he asked me one day in clinic point blank, well, how many patients like me have you treated in your practice? And how many of them declined chemotherapy? And how many of them did well as a result? And I couldn't answer his question, right? I could cite the data. And even when we dug into the data back then, this study was conducted, I want to say almost 20 years ago. Never showed the racial breakdown of the patients on the clinical trial. So I couldn't even tell him, how a patient like him, a middle-aged Asian male, fared in the clinical trial, where even that clinical trial contained patients such as him. And so that was a moment that I woke up, so to speak, to the value of real-world data. And he was absolutely correct. I've treated patients just like him, but I didn't have that information on my fingertips and couldn't reassure him, right, of his decision not to receiving chemotherapy, renowned centers, who all recommended, like I did, that he receive chemotherapy. He opted to not receive chemotherapy. I followed him very closely, and 4 years later, at least the last time I saw him, he was cancer-free. Thank goodness. So that moment, Ron, woke me up to the value of healthcare data.
That's really interesting to see how that, kind of sparked that desire to know more and the cure and spark the curiosity. I understand there's been so much talk about health equity in healthcare. So it's really one of the top concerns of healthcare leaders and healthcare executives. It's been heartening to see health systems actually seem to be really devising some concrete plans and taking some real steps. I understand this obviously has been a concern of you, but specifically with LGBTQ plus patients in terms of addressing their outcomes and disparities. So I was wondering if you could talk about that issue and why that's such a passion of yours.
Absolutely. And and Ron, I would say my experience, right, with that patient probably is a great prelude to this topic. So on January 12th of this year, the Center for American Progress, or CAP, released the results of a survey that they conducted that show many, if not most, of the LGBTQ plus, or who I will refer to as the sexual and gender diverse, or the SGD population, have avoided healthcare in the past year out of fear. And we're not talking about the general phobia or fear associated with going to the doctor's office or a healthcare facility that many people have. What we're talking about here is fear of bias and discrimination. And the takeaway from the study is that SGD respondents to the survey were more than three times as likely as non-SGD respondents to report that they delayed or avoided receiving needed medical care or preventative screenings in the past year because of disrespect or discrimination from a doctor or other healthcare providers. And then, when we add in all the other issues that we have been hearing and seeing in recent years with race, ethnicity, and their impact on healthcare, as you highlighted, this becomes a very complicated issue very fast. Now, what we do know from past studies that the SGD population tends to score lower when it comes to both physical and mental health. And then focusing on cancer, right, in particular, cancer-related disparities and variations do exist here. SGD people disproportionately experience certain cancers such as anal, colorectal, breast, cervical, prostate, and lung, just to name a few, at a much higher rate than non-SGD population. And we also have recent data from the Moffitt Cancer Center in Florida that show that SGD people with cancer, they also often have significantly worse survival rates compared to the non-SGD population. And many of these reasons are unknown. However, their study do show two specific reasons, which are very similar to what that CAP survey found. First and foremost is the fact that these individuals tend to be more reluctant to engage with healthcare systems due to fear and discrimination. And because of this, their cancer is often diagnosed at later stages when it is more difficult to treat and therefore much more fatal. And second, SGD individuals are more likely to self-report depression and poorer quality of life, very similar to the CAP survey, and are more likely to lack robust social support systems, to help them through their cancer treatment and their recovery. And we know that from recent studies, cancer patients with poor psychosocial health and support do have worse outcomes than those who have good support. And so with all this, right, reading all this from my perspective as an oncologist who in my very early days of training, I was taught to be unbiased in the way I treat patients, don't be judgmental. All of this information is extremely hard to digest, knowing that this is very prevalent out in the healthcare community today.
Well, there's so much to unpack in what we just talked about, but one of the keys is maybe just getting to the point of building trust. Because I mean, as you mentioned, some of these patients in the SGD community, that they're leery of healthcare because of their concerns of bias and discrimination. And some of those concerns, let's be frank, are probably very well founded. So how do we start building trust so that patients are willing to even go in the door in the first place?
Yeah, very difficult and great question. I would say building trust in any population, I think where the foundations and approach to building trust in any minority populations are quite similar, right? So from my personal experience, I have found that when patients trust their clinicians, they will provide them, with the accurate and necessary data. And I would say that the fundamental tenets to building trust are education and transparency, right? First, just clearly explain what you're doing, right? And why you're doing it. If you're collecting information per se, right? Why you're collecting such information and what it will be used for. And I think that this transparency, right, will help garner trust from the patients that you are doing the right thing for them. And they, fundamentally need to understand how, providing their physician with the information they're seeking will ultimately lead to their improved experience and care. And I think that, I think lastly, right, and maybe, paramount, right, is to show that you care about that patient in front of you, and that you care about their concerns. And when you read surveys of coming out on this topic, many people in the SGD community have anecdotal stories of providers just telling them, "I don't know how to take care of a patient like you." That's not a very reassuring statement, and I think statements like that definitely feeds back into this cycle of mistrust, right, and fear. And as I highlighted before, I was trained in my very early days of my training, to not be judgmental. It's easier said than done. We all have implicit biases that we need to fully understand and to essentially, check those biases, outside of your office, outside of, the patient exam room, right? And so I think that when one is aware, right, of those issues, that is a big first step, towards developing a plan to counteract, those biases, and all of those historical, notions that we all carry with us, and hopefully, we'll set them on a good path, towards building trust with that patient.
How do health systems help in terms of training their clinicians in terms of in interacting with SGD populations and kind of getting them to open up and to understand that they're trying to help, and by giving accurate data, they can offer better healthcare?
Yeah, Ron, I think I'm going to take a step back here, right? Because I think yes, I do think it is the responsibility of health systems, to train their staff, right, and to create a comfortable environment. But I think fundamental to this as well is the medical education system that's out there. So I'm going to start with that, if that's okay. Currently, only a select group of medical schools offer specific training on SGD issues. When I was in medical school, it was never discussed, and sadly, this is typically dictated by the general culture and the value, if not the politics, of the school, and at a time when the most recent Gallup poll, right, is showing that more and more Americans are identifying as SGD, with highest proportion being reported in the Gen Z population at nearly 20%. I would say that as a society, we can't ignore, this group of patients, right? Medical schools need to, at the very beginning of training, need to address these issues, because otherwise they are failing their students, and they're failing society and in their mission to adequately prepare, right, this country's future doctors. And once those doctors get out into practice, this is where health systems come in, or when they get into their training, right? This is where health systems come in. I think, you know, health systems can start by offering training programs to all their staff, you know, on SGD topics. And this training should be mandatory. It should be recurrent. And in addition to, you know, training their healthcare providers, is to create a safe place, right, for these patients. And these could be just very small gestures, right, such as just allowing their staff to actually include their preferred pronoun on their name badges, or displaying symbols, in their common areas, such as the pride flag, you know, knowing that the institution acknowledges the existence of these patients definitely creates a more comfortable environment for the patients. You know, when I hear Black patients, you know, talking about going into a doctor's office or going into a healthcare facility, and they just see pictures on the wall, they're all white patients, white doctors, they just automatically immediately feel uncomfortable, right? The same thing here. You know, I think healthcare facilities and practices can and should display photographs of SGD individuals and families. So I think a lot of what we hear about when it comes to addressing racial bias also applies here.
I really like that you talked about going back to not just the health system training, which is good, but also needs to get to fundamentally changing medical education training as well for young clinicians that are coming up. This also gets to a point in terms of the diversity of the staff of hospitals, health systems, and providers, you know, because obviously, it helps if you have patients on staff that identify or can at least relate to patients from backgrounds. Patients like to be able to talk to back doctors that can either part of their background, or at least are familiar with their background too. So how important is that in terms of health system taking a real concentrated effort on improving diversity and equity and inclusion?
You know, I think it's extremely important. And you know, but Ron, I think even if a hospital has a diverse staff, you know, it doesn't negate the need to educate that staff, right? And because of the fact that, you know, and I'm going to use myself as an example. I am Asian, right? You would think that I would help make other Asian patients more comfortable or know how to talk to Asian patients better. In reality, I don't think I do. I don't think I know how to talk to them better than a non-Asian patient. I was never trained. And that is, I mean, I think about that. It's just so fundamental to, you know, to who I am, right? And then you take it one step further and you're talking about sexual orientation, which is already a uncomfortable topic for a lot of individuals to talk about, right? Is the fact that, you know, there's I see that it, and even I am at fault for this. I'm kind of, you know, tiptoeing around the issue, right? And I think without adequate training in how to deal with situations like this, I don't think just because you are similar to the individual in front of you, you know, takes care of, you know, everything when it comes to breaking down that barrier.
I was talking with the head of patient experience at New York Presbyterian yesterday. He had a great phrase that really stuck with me. He talked about the idea of fostering respectful curiosity. And I'm really paraphrasing, but he talked about it's one thing if you maybe see a same-sex couple with a child of a different race and you're asking, oh, what's the story there? It was supposed to tell me about your family. Because like one way says, okay, you'd like to hear more about the family. And most people tend to like to talk about their family. So there's a way of, you know, showing curiosity that's not meant to be intrusive, but because you genuinely are trying to get to know the patient. And I just thought that was just a great phrase he used to talk about, you know, connecting with patients and getting them to talk more and to share more of their information about themselves.
I agree with that completely. There is tremendous power in being curious and just asking questions, right? And I think many times we make assumptions. Just even thinking back to practice, I mean, I've made assumptions of the folks and the people accompanying the patients, right, to their visits, right? And I would say that it's probably not uncommon for healthcare providers that if they see, same-sex individuals in a room that they just automatically, call them by as their friend, right? Ask what their relationship is, because they may not be just friends, right? And the fact that you assume that they are friends, we're just calling them friends because you're uncomfortable, further propagates that negative experience, that we are here to talk about.
What other advice would you offer? If you offered some really good insights already, but what other advice would you offer to hospitals, health systems, providers that want to do better for their SGD patients?
I would say that, don't just talk the talk, right? But walk the walk, right? You could put up all the displays of inclusion, equity, everywhere, but your policies need to reflect that, right? Your policies towards your staff need to reflect that, and this could be as simple as providing same-sex health benefits, right? To your staff. And we, as we stated, displaying photographs, depicting SGD people in the lobby, just to really show that that what you are saying, what the health system is saying, is truly what they believe in, right? And to create the safe environment for both the staff and the patient, because I truly believe that if your staff feel included, important, and safe, then the patients walking in through those doors will feel the same as well.
In this environment, when you see some of the legislation that's been going around the country aimed at gender affirming care, I mean, just how much damage is that doing in terms of creating more mistrust among patients that you're trying to reach and alienating patients that are, that deserve the same care that everybody else gets?
Extremely, Ron. The CAP survey, which I found to be very extensive and quite eye-opening, did touch on this topic, right? How the current political environment is adversely affecting trust in this patient population. All of these negative rhetoric that is coming through really does a number on folks, right? That even if your healthcare provider do not believe in what is in the news, on the news, or the healthcare system does not subscribe to that, I think it does make people put up walls around them, right? Because they never know when discrimination is gonna, be thrown at them, or when they're going to face it. So it definitely does not help. I think it is, if anything, it's forcing people, more and more to hide who they are. As we talked about, when they hide who they are, we really can't fully treat the patient, right? And to really understand their needs. It is very unfortunate, Ron.
So I know we're getting near the end of our window, but do you feel, I'm not looking for an answer here, but do you feel any optimism that there seems to be more progress in terms of expanding care, or is it more just an understanding of like how far we have to go?
It's a little bit of both, I would say. I would say that we have taken a very important step forward by acknowledging and talking about the issue, right? I would say just 5 years ago, this is not a topic that is often discussed. And so I often say that the first step towards addressing a problem is to acknowledge the problem exists. And I think the healthcare system and the professional societies out there are acknowledging that a problem exists here. At the government level, there is acknowledgement that collecting more accurate SGD, data is important, very similar to collecting, more accurate race data as well. And now what we do with the information, I don't have as good of a guess as others, but it is my hope that as long as the data is out there and we acknowledge the problem, that we will come up with the solution to addressing the problem.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for taking some time to talk about obviously some really important issues, and I really appreciate the conversation. So thanks so much for your time.
Absolutely. Thanks, Ron.
Thank you for joining Databook, a podcast presented by Chief Healthcare Executive, a brand of MGH Life Sciences. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. For the latest news, analysis, and insights on healthcare, visit our website, chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can follow us on social media on LinkedIn and Twitter. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. Thanks again for joining us. Take care.